News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You are listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Thursday edition of the show. We've almost made it through the week. I am your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be here. This is, of course, the show where we have longer conversations with folks who are in the know or making things happen here around Michigan's great Southwest. If you've heard about it on WSJM News, you'll hear about it on Our Take, but in a more extended fashion. We'll get into it just a little more here on the show. And we have multiple guests lined up for today's edition of the program. First of all, we will talk with Congressman Fred Upton about several issues unfolding in Washington this week. In particular, I wanted to talk with him about immigration because President Trump held a meeting this week with lawmakers talking about immigration reform. DACA is a driving force behind it. The members of Congress, as well as the president, would like to see some kind of legislative replacement for the DACA program, enabling many young dreamers, as they've been called, to stay in the United States. These are young people who were brought into the country illegally when they were young, but they don't really know any other country. They face possible deportation. Congressman Fred Upton wants to work on that, so we'll talk with him about that on today's edition of Our Take. We will also talk with a representative of the Michigan Horticulture Society. They recently picked a new president for this year, and it's a local grower right here from Berrien County. It's Monica Teichman of Tremendous Fruit Farm. And she is the first woman who will lead this organization. So I talked to the representative of the Horticultural Society to learn more about it and about why they picked Monica Teichman of Tremendous Fruit Farm to be the president of the group for 2018. We'll also talk with Greg Grothaus from the city of St. Joe. You can now search cemetery records online at one of the city cemeteries. So we'll learn about that, about this new service the city put together. And we'll also talk about multiple other issues on today's edition of Our Take. And if you'd like to weigh in on something that we have discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. Right now it's time for a quick break, and stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You're listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Thursday edition of the program. I'm your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. For this segment of the program, I thought we would talk to Congressman Fred Upton. I caught up with him yesterday to find out about what's been going on in Washington as of late. In particular, I wanted to ask him about immigration reform because that is something that President Trump talked about with lawmakers this week. So Fred and I had a conversation about this issue and a couple of others. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Fred. So first, thanks for talking with us. I know you're planning to be home this weekend, so hopefully the bad weather will give us a miss or something.
We'll see. I'll be ready. I'll have my snowblower cranked up, ready to go.
All right. Well, talking about business in Washington, immigration, there was a meeting this week with the president. What's your take on what came out of that meeting?
Well, I think some very positive news. I've been involved in the immigration debate for a long, long time, a couple of years, actually. And it's a broken system for everybody here. It's just flat out broken. And it seems as though there was, from all accounts, a good meeting yesterday with the president. A bipartisan meeting. I've talked to a number of the principals that were there. Frankly, I've talked to the president directly about immigration in the past as well, and I know he shares my commitment to get something done. Rightly so. He is tired of executive orders. He asked Congress to do their business and gave us a deadline, and I feel pretty optimistic that we'll reach that deadline. A lot of things are moving in the right direction. You know, for these kids that came, who knows, 15 years ago, maybe at age 3 or 4, they've got no place to go other than here. They've been in our schools, they're working, they're paying their taxes, they're good citizens, and they're, frankly, scared to death. I met with a number of the DACA students earlier this week that came out from Michigan to Washington. They know of my commitment to get this thing fixed. And as the president said earlier this week, then, not only does he want to see it fixed for DACA, but actually look at real immigration reform, knowing that it's more than just one component that has some problems here. So I don't know that we can get it done by the end of the week or by the end of next week. But certainly I think that we're going to beat the deadline that he gave us of March 5th and get it done, if not by the end of the month, certainly by the very beginning of February. Things are moving in the right place.
All right, so I've heard him say there has to be a wall as part of this deal, and then he says there doesn't. What is the situation there?
Well, I think what you'll see is some border security. We want to make sure that our borders are safe anywhere, whether it's in the north or south, the east or west. Border security means different things to different people in different situations. I don't think anyone is talking about a wall for 2,000 or 3,000 miles. But I think that it might be helpful in some populated areas. But we also ought to use the techniques of drones, a variety of things to make sure that our borders are safe. And ultimately, my guess is that that will be part of the solution. Maybe defined as border security, but some of that may, in fact, some of it, a very small part, may be actually a serious wall that protects the border.
Okay. Democrats on board here?
At the end of the day, talking to some of the folks that were in the meeting earlier this week with the president, I think there was a pretty good mood of folks on both sides of the aisle that they're going to look at four components, one of which is border security. Obviously, the big driver here is DACA, chain migration in terms of where things are, and the visa lottery. Those four things are going to be debated, and I think we'll have a pretty decent compromise plan that can be passed in both the House and Senate with Republicans and Democrats.
And you're expecting that very soon here.
In the next couple of weeks. I don't know that we can get it done before the end of next week, but a lot is happening. I already had a couple of meetings today, Wednesday, about it. A lot of discussion on the House floor. And, if not by the end of the month, I think certainly by the very beginning of February, we can have something and certainly beat the deadline of March 5th that the president gave us back in September.
All right, so that's immigration. Now, something I have been hearing about is there have been some complaints about a failure to approve funding for CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program. Can you tell us about that?
I got some good news for you on CHIP.
Okay.
Again, this is another issue that I've been working on. So CHIP, this is a children's health care plan that I helped shepherd through 5 years ago through the Energy and Commerce Committee when I was chairman. When we passed it, this helps working families with insurance for their kids. It's always been bipartisan. We also coupled it with more money for community health centers. That legislation expired at the end of the fiscal year last September. And we've done a number of Band-Aids to keep it alive and moving. Michigan, we're okay until early spring, but other states, in fact, are going to be running out of money. It appears as though we're very close to an agreement that will reauthorize this plan for the next 5 years, and it'll be paid for, and we're very close. Our hope is that we can include it in legislation next week that the president's going to have to sign. It's a good thing to get it off our plate. I had a number of meetings earlier this week. I can tell that we're very close to getting this thing not only passed on the House floor, but a bill that the president's going to be able to sign that'll take this away as an issue and help the families that really need it the most.
And this could keep CHIP going at least for a while there.
Well, in Michigan, our funding doesn't really get pinched until the end of March.
Okay.
Obviously, we want to see, but other states, I think there's five states, Minnesota, Oregon, a couple of others, are really almost even day-to-day. We want to fix this for all 50 states. This bill to extend it for 5 years, obviously, will do that. It looks to be a five-year reauthorization, and it'll include monies for the continuation of community health centers, which, again, both these issues, for as long as I've been around, have really been bipartisan, dating back to the 90s, as they should be.
Okay, we're talking with Congressman Fred Upton. Finally, I just wanted to briefly ask you, while we still have some time, do you have any thoughts on the recent announcements about congressional retirements? It seems as though there's been several of them. recently. We've got Republican Ed Royce is retiring. We had John Conyers announcing his retirement or resignation last year. Senator Jeff Flake, any thoughts on this happening? Is this creating a problem in Congress for leadership?
Well, you know, this is the time. I mean, this is part and parcel of the normal process. We've had a couple of states with filing deadlines, and so this is not unexpected. There's Republicans as well as Democrats that have announced their retirement and sort of clearing the decks for what will be pretty obvious big political year. So no real surprises at this point.
All right, that was Congressman Fred Upton talking with us about immigration reform. He thinks there could be a plan by the end of this month, early next month at the latest, he's thinking. Also, CHIP funding, he thinks some 5 years' worth of funding will be able to get approved soon. And then he's not too concerned about the recent retirements and resignations from Congress, noting, we're here at the end of an election cycle, so that's when you hear about these retirements. That's Congressman Fred Upton, Republican of St. Joseph. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take, and it's not just Congress that's been hard at work as of late. In Lansing, our state lawmakers, are back to work. They returned on yesterday, actually. So one of the things that they are being asked to work on, among many other issues, whether it's auto insurance reform or skilled trades legislation, et cetera, is the unemployment insurance system here in Michigan. At least the Michigan League for Public Policy is asking that lawmakers implement some reforms to unemployment in Michigan. They put out a report, the Michigan League for Public Policy, they put out a report this week saying that the state's unemployment system is grossly inadequate when compared to nearby surrounding states. They looked at the region, and I spoke with the Michigan League for Public Policy senior policy analyst Peter Ruark. He told me, first of all, when you just look at those other Midwestern states, our state does less to help out folks who are looking for work than the others.
Among the upper Midwest states, Michigan pays the lowest maximum benefit, and its average weekly benefit is the lowest percentage of the state average weekly wage.
Ruark was telling me Michigan's maximum unemployment benefit has been the same since 2002, standing at $362 a week despite inflation and increased costs for everything. Low-income workers, he said, often don't even qualify for unemployment in Michigan. Not to mention there's a 20-week limit on receiving benefits in the state. That's actually relatively recent. They implemented that limit back in 2011.
Michigan did something pretty radical and unheard of several years ago. Michigan was the first state to actually cut the maximum number of weeks.
So that's the Michigan League for Public Policy's Jeff Ruark there saying that some reforms should be made to update the state's unemployment benefits system. Now, Ruark did tell me he'll give state lawmakers credit for one thing. He thinks they did do a good job last year of addressing false fraud accusations in the unemployment system. And these come in a couple of different forms. First of all, there's identity theft when someone's identity is stolen and someone applies for unemployment benefits. But another big problem was simply computer errors that falsely would accuse or determine that a person who had received unemployment had done so fraudulently, and those people ended up being penalized by the state. Lawmakers last year worked to address that. Now an actual person has to review each filing. And so he said that's one thing they did do right.
Last year we had to put out a really bad fire, so to speak, and fix that false fraud problem. Now that that's been fixed, we need to go back to discussing how can we make our unemployment insurance system more effective in helping workers.
Those are the thoughts of Jeff of Peter Ruark with the Michigan League for Public Policy. They're hoping state lawmakers this year will implement some reforms. We'll see if they do. I have a feeling they will not, but they will be doing plenty of other things, and we'll be keeping you up to date on those here on WSJM. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. It's time now for a break. When we come back, we will talk with a representative of the Michigan State Horticultural Society. That's because a local grower, you may have heard of her, it's Monica Teichman from Tremendous Fruit Farm. She's been named the president of the organization for the year. I caught up with a representative of the Horticultural Society to find out more. And if you'd like to weigh in on something that we discuss, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's ourtake@wsjm.com. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in. For this Thursday edition of the program, I am the host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be here with you. Last segment, we talked to Congressman Fred Upton. Right now, I thought we would learn a little something about the Michigan State Horticultural Society. That's because recently they announced their new officers for the year, and named as president of the Michigan State Horticultural Society for the year was Monica Teichman of Tremendous Fruit Farm. That's a fine location. That's where they do the cherry pit spitting competition in Eau Claire each summer. And so I caught up with the Michigan State Horticultural Society secretary, Ben Smith, to learn more about what this organization is, what it means that we have a local grower now at the helm of it for the year. And so let's hear that conversation now. All right, Ben. So the Michigan State Horticultural Society, I see the organization's been around for quite a while here, since what, the 1870s?
Yeah, it was founded in 1870 back on the Michigan State campus, and was run by Michigan State for quite a while, 100 years or so. Michigan State provided the executive secretary up until the 1990s. And at that point, the board decided with stuff that was going on in Michigan State, as I understand it, and some, I guess, probably financial pressures of trying to get the university employees to do other things, not to be the executive for a horticultural organization. The board hired executive secretary then, and then it's kind of been its own separate, completely separate entity since the 90s.
So tell us what the Michigan State Horticultural Society does.
The main purpose is to enhance the farmers' ability to grow fruit, to improve the fruit-growing areas of Michigan through research, through education. So we fund quite a bit of research, about $100,000 worth of research every year through Michigan State, focused on fruit technologies, fruit research. And then we also co-host with the Michigan Vegetable Council the Great Lakes Fruit, Vegetable, and Farm Market Expo, held every year in December, generally the first week of December or so. And that's held in Grand Rapids and is a really large trade show, largest trade show in the Midwest of its type for fruit and vegetable growers. And so farmers from Michigan and all the surrounding states, a lot of international folks come in as well, come to Grand Rapids to see the trade shows, what the exhibitors are showing off for this year, and then also go to the educational sessions and try to learn a little bit that they can take back to their farm.
So is the society based in Benton Harbor?
The society address is whatever the executive secretary's address is. So, Alan Anthony was the previous one, so it was just his address. Now it's my address.
All right, and so for this year, 2018, Monica Teichman of Tremendous Fruit Farm in Eau Claire is the president. So why was she chosen to serve in this role?
Monica is a great farmer, great leader in the industry. She's really been a really good board member, a really good contributor, good ideas. So we're excited that she is going to be the next president. It's kind of a historic event for us. It's our first female president, so we're excited about that. Kind of unintentionally happened, I guess, but woman hadn't been in line to be president for forever. So Monica has finally been able to break that barrier, and we got several good women on the board now, and I'm sure another one will follow her very soon. We have a new president every year, so it rotates quite a bit.
So as the president of the Michigan State Horticultural Society, what responsibilities come with that role?
She will go to a couple meetings over the next year with me. She will run all of our board meetings. I try to bounce a lot of the things that are going on with the Hort Society business off of her, get her input on decisions that are made day to day. And then at the end of the year at the expo, she'll help out with some of the things there. She'll be the MC for the banquet that we do in December and things like that at the expo.
All right, we're talking with Ben Smith of the Michigan State Horticultural Society. Ben, you are a farmer yourself locally, correct?
I am. I farm with John Hinkleman. Do you know John Hinkleman, County Commissioner?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I'm his son-in-law. And so him and his son, John, my brother-in-law, and I farm out here in Bainbridge Township. So that's my full-time job, and the Hort Society is my part-time job.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add about the Michigan State Horticultural Society?
The organization has got a really great board right now. We're excited for the future. It's kind of a time of transition between Al and I this year, and so we'll transition and keep moving forward. So it'll be exciting to see what the future brings.
Okay, that's Ben Smith, Secretary of the Michigan State Horticultural Society. They just picked a new president for 2018. It's Eau Claire's Monica Teichman heading up the organization. She's from Tremendous Fruit Farm, where they do the world-famous cherry pit spitting competition each year. And she is the first woman picked to be the president of the Horticultural Society, a statewide group that is responsible for funding research and holding some expos each year. So I appreciate Ben's time talking with us about the group. Newstalk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Right now, I wanted to tell you about something that the Michigan Department of Natural Resources is doing right now. They want to know how many elk are in Michigan. So they're conducting a population study. Elk, you know, as my father used to always tell me, son, know your elk. And that's what the DNR is attempting to do. They're doing an elk count. It's going on next week in northeast northern Michigan. It's not as though there are elk running around down here. But the DNR's Katie Keene told Michigan News Network this week, 2018 is the 100th anniversary of elk here in our fair state of Michigan.
Elk had been known to be across Michigan in the late 1800s, but they had all disappeared due to overharvest and lack of habitat. So in 1918, there were 7 elk brought from the western United States to Wolverine, Michigan. So it took some years for that population to grow.
It's always interesting to learn that sort of history about Michigan when you hear about things like what the elk population may have been years ago, how forested the state once was, the fact that wolverines used to live here. Anyway, that said, the DNR's Katie Keene, she says there were about 1,100 elk here in the state of Michigan last year. They use a hunting season to try to help control the number, since she says the ideal number for the habitat is about 500 to 900 elk. And she said the DNR has begun physically counting the herd this year by flying over their habitat areas in northern Michigan, which is near Gaylord.
Just as important as getting the estimated population is knowing our distribution of elk, so where they are across this area, if they are, you know, pushing boundaries, if they're all to the north or to the south, just understanding where those large group of elk are.
That's the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, Katie Keene. She also told us the Michigan Department of Natural Resources license plate this year has an elk on it, and that is to celebrate the 100th anniversary of elk here in Michigan. So that's something the DNR is up to the north there. And we appreciate Katie talking with Michigan News Network this week. News Talk 94.9 WSJM, this is Our Take, and it's time for a break. When we come back, we'll learn about something that they are doing at a cemetery in St. Joe. This is the Riverview Cemetery, and you can now search the records of the cemetery online. It's an interesting project of the St. Joseph Department of Public Works. We'll talk with Deputy Public Works Director Greg Grothaus coming up on the next segment of the show. And if you'd like to weigh in on something that we have discussed on the show, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Oh, yay! Oh, yay!
We are excited to announce something new to the very popular app Town Crier Wire. Introducing Video Newswire. Now, not only can you read local stories that matter to you, you can now watch the top stories happening in Southwest Michigan. Our team of reporters hit the streets with video recording equipment, so when the big news happens, they are there to ask the questions and video record the events and upload them to the app. Then you can watch and see it for yourself.
Oh, yay! Oh, yay! Oh, yay!
Video Newswire is a tab you'll find on the home screen inside the app. Click the tab and you'll see all of the video news stories available for you to watch at your convenience. This is unique to Southwest Michigan. There's nothing else like it. If you don't have the app yet, go to your mobile download store, type in Town Crier Wire, and press install. It's that easy. And again, it's free.
Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. There's a new way to read and see your local news today. Just pick up your phone or your tablet too. Go to your store. It's easy to do.
Town Crier Wire?
Town Crier Wire.
Town Crier Wire.
News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for being with us. This is the Thursday edition of the show. I am the host today. My name is Andrew Green. This is the show where we take longer looks, more in-depth looks at things that you may have heard about on WSJM News as of late. We have extended conversations with the folks who are in the know or who are making things happen. Speaking of people who are making things happen, on today's program we talked with Congressman Fred Upton about a couple of issues playing out in Washington, immigration reform and also CHIP funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program. He's optimistic on both of those issues. Also today, we learned something about the Michigan State Horticultural Society because a grower from Nall Clair Farm has been named president for this year. It's Monica Teichman of a tremendous fruit farm. I reached out to Monica, but tremendous was closed. But we talked to the Horticultural Society secretary there, Ben Smith. And right now for this segment of the show, I thought we'd learn about what's going on over at Riverview Cemetery in St. Joseph. Recently, the city of St. Joe announced a new online database of all the plots at Riverview Cemetery in St. Joe. And this was a big project of the Public Works Department. I chatted with St. Joe Deputy Public Works Director Greg Grothaus about this. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Greg, so there is a online database for Riverview Cemetery now. Tell us a little more about what people can do now.
Well, the system that we just unveiled is called Pontum. It's an online cemetery search module. So people can go to the city website under cemeteries. In the upper right-hand corner of the website, there'll be a burial search tab. You click on that, it'll take you to another page, and then you can search for people. You can search based on the last name. You can search based on the first name. You could search based on a burial date, and it will filter out everything based on the information that you put into it. And then you can click on the name that you'd like, and it'd bring up information that at least the city has on file currently for that person. Burial date of birth, you know, whatever may have been in the obituary at the time, possibly, or, you know, it may be just pretty basic information. Hmm. And then there's another tab where you can click locate. You click on the locate tab, it'll give you basically an aerial shot of the cemetery, and it'll point to where that grave is. And then as you zoom in, you can zoom in a little bit closer to see to the point where it'll start populating the lots with names of who's occupying that space. And then it's color-coded to tell you what availability is there in the cemetery. So, you know, red would indicate the grave is sold and occupied. Mm-hmm. Green is actually unavailable, which typically means there's a tree or some shrubs in that spot. White is sold, unoccupied. And blue is available. So a lot of possibilities. People can just look at the website to see what spaces they're interested in to purchase, or they can be looking for a loved one, anything along those lines.
So why did you decide to make an online database of everything at Riverview Cemetery?
Well, several years ago, the city needed to kind of organize. We wanted to organize our cemetery historical information, I guess. You know, so we had looked into a bunch of different, you know, like cemetery modules like this Pontum system. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we chose Pontum because we thought it worked the best. You know, one of the things that they offered is this online module, and it made sense. It helps, you know, our field staff. It helps me in meeting with families, and then obviously it'll help the public as well. So it's been about a 2-year process, and this is kind of the end of that whole project of inputting and organizing all of our cemetery information.
How much work went into putting all this together?
like I said, it's about a 2-year process. We had one person going through all of our records for the. She was working about part time, and she was going through all of our cemetery records and making sure people were where they're supposed to be and putting them into the system so that way we have the data that we have available. So.
Great. So if you want to see this, you go to sjcity.com.
Correct. And then go to the cemeteries tab. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a tab that says burial search. And then you click on that, and it's pretty self-explanatory from there.
All right. Well, you talked about this at a city commission meeting last month, and I thought it was an interesting service. I'll have some instructions on our website how to get there. And I just thought it was interesting that you put some work into this effort because a lot of people might find this something that's useful.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it, honestly. It's helped us several times already, just being able to look at that information while we're at the cemetery. And, if people are in the cemetery and have questions, we're able to pull it up real quick, even on like on our phones or going back to the office there at the cemetery and looking. So it's been very helpful just in the short week and a half that we've had it available, even to staff.
Great. Are there plans to add more information to the database?
We have... within Riverview Cemetery, we have the Royalton section, which is the oldest part of the cemetery. The records that we have aren't the best. I don't know if we'll ever get into that, but we may start, trying to plug some of that data in due time. And then there's City Cemetery or Lakeview Cemetery off of Lakeview Avenue. Again, records aren't the best there, but we may try to start entering some of the data and, adding to it in that way, yes.
That's a city cemetery?
City cemetery, yep.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, there's opportunities. Obviously, there could be some mistakes or people will have information that they can send us, to the city, and we can update, somebody's information into the system based off of what's provided by family, friends that may be looking up somebody.
All right. That was St. Joseph City Deputy Public Works Director Greg Roadhouse talking with us about a new online searchable database of the plots at Riverview Cemetery in lovely St. Joe. You go to the website, the city's website, and you can search names, and they'll have some basic information from obituaries on individuals who were buried there, and also information on plots that are available still. You can look all that up. We have a link to it at our website, WSJM.com. You could Google St. Joe Cemetery, WSJM, and find that. Or you could go to sjcity.com. Let's see if we can walk through the process here. I'll see if I can figure this out. So I'm looking at my browser here. Now, if I scroll all the way down, bottom left, it says live here. You look below that. One of the options is cemeteries. I click it, and then it takes me to another page, and I see on the right at the top in an orange box, it says burial search. I'll click that. And now there I am. I'm at a search page where I can enter the information of someone. So I will enter Green Andrew to see if this pulls me up. I hope I'm not buried at Riverview Cemetery. No matching records found. But if I enter the name of someone who actually was buried there, it would show me where and have some basic information on that. So that's an interesting service now being offered by the city of St. Joe, and I appreciate Greg's time. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take, and to close out today's show, I thought I'd tell you about an event taking place in Kalamazoo this week. It is a craft brewers convention. Beer makers from all over are gathering in Kalamazoo this week because, as we know, beer making has become a big thing here in Michigan. We're sort of becoming experts at it in Michigan. We're certainly experts at consuming beer in Michigan. So, considering the fact that Michigan is one of the top states in the country for craft breweries, and brewers are meeting in Kalamazoo this week, they're holding the Michigan Brewers Guild annual conference. Guild Executive Director Scott Graham talked with Michigan News Network about what's happening.
Put together a 3-day technical conference and trade show that's aimed at education, offering networking opportunities, and we have speakers both locally and from across the nation. We actually have one from a brewery in China coming.
So that's the gathering of Michigan craft brewers with brewers from all over the world showing up. It's going on through Friday. It started yesterday. They're meeting for the annual conference, which they're hoping to do every year going into the future.
There's always something new, and really to find that out, you have to go to your local brewery and see what they have on tap that's new, because there's always something new and exciting and tasty and delicious.
Graham says brewers will get some welcome tax relief with new federal tax reforms. That's something they'll talk about. A Brewers Guild Executive Director Scott Graham says craft breweries generate about $2 billion a year now for the Michigan economy. Indeed, we have plenty of great breweries just around here in Michigan's great southwest in the city of St. Joe. I know where I live in Bridgman, several, at least a few have popped up. There's the brand new one at the Old State Police Post. So Michigan embracing its new beer renaissance, and it is being discussed this week in Kalamazoo as the fastest growing craft in Michigan continues to generate attention. News Talk 94.9 WSJM, that does it for today's edition of Our Take. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we will chat with the city manager of South Haven. We'll also learn about the Girls on the Run program, and we'll talk about new offerings at the box office this weekend with our man in the dark, Jacob Holmes. If you would like to weigh in on something that we discuss on the show, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's ourtake@wsjm.com. I've been your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to have been with you, and you have a fantastic rest of your day.